I want to invite you to listen to a conversation with Don Flemons. Don Flemons, co-founder of Carolina Chocolate Drops, the American songster, and traveling all of last year as the proprietor, we'll say, since he came up with the idea and pushed it everywhere he went, as 2014 being the year of the American folk singer. And he's still going to do it a little while longer, I think. I think the concept is going to live a little bit longer, and you're going to enjoy hearing from Dom. Interesting conversation with Dom coming up about something special that he's doing in the Cincinnati area with the Cincinnati Orchestra. Right now, Dom Flemons on Unreal Bluegrass. I'm really happy to have my friend Dom Flemons return to Unreal Bluegrass. He's had a busy year. How are you, Dom?
Oh, I've been doing good. Just on the run. Just got a little break now, and I'm on the run again tomorrow.
You are, if people don't follow you on Facebook, they should, because Dom is pretty good about putting relevant matters up as he's traveling around. And last year being, you know, the year of the folk singer, it was just kind of a neat thing to watch you as you traveled around and you found new bits of music and new bits of history, and that is so much a part of your character and the music and what you try to interpret. But it's just been an interesting year. Tell us a little bit about, I have some specific things I want to ask you, but tell us a little bit about the year of the folk singer. Then I'm going to ask you if we're going to extend it out a little bit.
Well, I guess, it was really interesting. I'd say beginning of last year in 2014, I had this weird dream where this idea is like 2014 is going to be the year of the folk singer. And I had been, just in my own work, I had noticed that there were a lot of elements coming together that could help uplift folk singing more so than like this old-time music, but folk music.
Mm-hmm.
And the genre of folk singing, and you know, it just seemed like there was a new generation of people coming along. With the post-digital revolution, there were a lot more options for different types of music and folk song, and especially with things like Ted Llewellyn Davis, with Mumford and Sons in December. There's a lot of acoustic acts, Old Crow Medicine shows, in knocking it out. There's a lot of acoustic music that's around that. I just this whole notion came to me that was the year of the folk singer. And then when Pete Seeger passed away at the end of January, that really confirmed for me that, for at least for me, since I had this notion, I decided to make a statement for the rest of the year saying that it's the year of the folk singer, and push it as hard as I could so that, you know, that there would be at least somebody from the folk music community trying to push that notion farther out into the world, kind of like the way that Pete did, but
mm-hmm.
I've always tried to think of the communities that I've been involved with different types of music as, you know, communities. So I'm trying to help get the word out for other people so that folks can see it's not just one person that makes it happen, but it's everybody that makes it happen. I just tried to make it really broad and just tried to tell the story of folk music as basic as I could, as well as some of the news stories, and just try to keep it, you know, just keep the stuff going for people that are interested. And I figured that anybody who knew what the year of the folk singer meant would jump into action, and anybody who didn't, that's fine too.
Mm-hmm.
But people that did jump into action, they knew what it meant, and it feels like there's some traction from that.
You have the new, I guess last year, did Prospect Hill come out last year?
That's correct. Yeah. Prospect Hill came out last year.
And which is a great album, and we've played from it a lot on this program. And but when you travel around, maybe just more specific to last year, but I think it's more part of your character and your love of music and history, you don't show up and do an album. You pick up things as you travel about. I believe I'm correct on this. You might go into a community that may have a different angle on some folk music that maybe you knew of but didn't know the full story of, but you kind of pick up things as you wander around in your I think, am I right on that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like I have the knowledge I have of, you know, the experiences that I've had from meeting different people involved in the folk tradition, also from the different books and the scholarship that's been done on folk music, and then also as I go along, it's you know, there's always extra pieces of history that are lost, but then as they go along, you find new pieces to the puzzle. And so for me, as I've gone along, I've picked up different records, different books, met different people, and tried to put that out there as much as I could, just because it seems like it's relevant, you know. Like, well, for example, like a couple of years back when I met Pete Seeger for the first time, I was at the Ann Arbor Folk Festival, and one of the things that he told me about was that Woody Guthrie played the Bones, so he had mentioned that, and so I kind of had that idea in my head, but I had no documentation to show anything that said Woody Guthrie played the Bones. But it wasn't until toward the end of last year, Woody Guthrie's family, Nora Guthrie's daughter, put out a walking guide to Woody Guthrie's years in New York City called My Name is New York. And one of the tracks that they featured I think it was Time Magazine featured the track, was a track called Married Man's a Fool, which featured Sonny Perry singing and playing harmonica, and Woody Guthrie playing the bones.
No kidding.
And it was written down that he's playing the spoons, but hearing the sound of the instrument and also knowing this story from Pete. See, now, because I ran into Pete a couple of other times after that, and I asked him about it each time, and he really was like, oh, you know, he didn't really play that much. You know, you know, he just was really kind of dismissive of that particular story. But to hear a recording of Woody Guthrie playing the bones, that was something that was quite amazing. And then on my own album, Prospect Hill, Guy Davis and I do a tribute to Sonny Terry and Sonny's nephew, J.C. Burris, who played the bones on the track Marching Up Prospect Hill.
Yeah.
So for me, that was a very multifaceted kind of event of just different documentation, interpretive music, and also just the continuing folk tradition that, through my own work, I'm trying to carry on, just like people that came before me. And so that's how I tend to do a lot of things, is try to find where's the heart of several different pieces of the puzzle.
And really, the heart's everywhere. I mean, because you can find all these pieces and tie them together if you have time and the opportunity and the good fortune of finding, like you say, a recording with Pete mislabeled as playing the spoons. You know what the bones sound like, but probably the person writing the notes didn't know. So you find that nice connection there, that's just an amazing story.
Exactly. And so that's kind of when a lot of my work, especially also in the Chocolate Vouch previously, that was sort of the stuff that I would do. Because a lot of times people are really hung up with the notion of what's traditional, what's authentic, what's interpretive, what things do you put in, what things do you put out. And that's one of the ways that I try to reconcile that in my own mind when I play music, is I try to find the different pieces that will allow me to make a stamp on the song that is my own while still honoring the material that I've picked up.
And you really do. If you do it so well, Dom, I don't mean to embarrass you, but as I've told you this before, on Dom Flemons, when you see him on stage, it's like, this is a real, you know, you're really concerned about it. Here's the story. As far as you know, you provide that context of the history of the music. And then the music, of course, is part of a culture that you can also relate to because it comes out in the music. It is just a neat thing to see, and you do it so well.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate that.
Yeah, man. Listen, and I wanted to talk to you. This is good. I get to talk about the year of the folk singer. I saw here locally, I'm in northern Kentucky, and you know, I'm right across the river from Cincinnati, and you're coming here in the weekend, I guess the Friday the 23rd, couple of shows over that weekend, January, and you're going to be playing with Cincinnati Pops Orchestra. I want you to tell me how that came about, and then we can talk about what you're going to be doing there.
Well, you know, that gig came in just kind of, you know, last year I was in Cincinnati a lot, but actually about a year ago, the Cincinnati Pops Orchestra went to book me for this concert, which is actually a concert celebrating the works of Stephen Foster. And so for the past year, I've been working with the director, John Morris Russell, and different arrangers for several pieces for the concert. Like my main song I'll be singing will be the song "The Old Folks at Home," and it was really interesting to work with material in the way that the history that's wrapped around the material, that, you know, mainly that Stephen Foster wrote for the Blackface Minstrel Show. And so trying to figure out how to interpret the material as stylistically, you know, as it was written, but at the same time keep the dignity of modern performing. Because, you know, as a black performer, there's only so much I want to actually say if it's something that it's not right. Like, there's one song, "Ring Ring the Banjo," which we're going to do just more as a big instrumental blowout type song. That's like, you know, if you look at the words to that, that's not an easy song to clean up.
Yeah, I understand.
You know? But "The Old Folks at Home," for example, the thing that's really amazing about Stephen Foster's music is, while there's the blackface minstrelsy on one end of it, the other thing that Stephen Foster made very popular was the sentimental ballad, and the sentimental ballad about nostalgia, which is another very interesting double-edged sword as a black musician when talking about nostalgia, about the old home place.
Oh, yeah.
And how I fixed or at least arranged the song was, I took the second two verses and I put them in the front. Because the very first verse, which most people know, is "Way down upon the Suwannee River, far, far away." And he's talking about how he longs to go back to the old plantation. So instead of making that the first thing, I made that the last thing. Because the second and third verses are all about how he misses his old home. And it's about him going back to his family.
Okay.
And that he misses his family and those ideas. And that as he's roamed all around the world, it's so dreary, all he can hope for is to go back home. And so I tried to frame it that way.
Yeah, okay, I see. Yeah, I get it.
You know,
yeah.
Making it more like he misses his family more so than it being missing the plantation itself. You know, the plantation is just kind of superfluous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get you. How much did you really get into, I know you did, but how much more than your normal knowledge of Stephen Foster did you dive into to get into this show?
I haven't read like the full-on biographies of Stephen Foster. Like, you know, I haven't read a book on it, but I've seen like the American Masters on Stephen Foster.
Mm-hmm.
I have a book of a lot of the original sheet music for Stephen Foster, and a lot of the research I've done with approaching the minstrel show has. Yeah, it runs across Stephen Foster quite a bit,
because
he's while he's mostly associated with the Blackface Minstrel Show, he's also kind of like the generation or two generations before Tin Pan Alley.
Yeah, he was such a popular songwriter back in those days. It's hard to imagine how popular he really was, but everybody had some home that had a piano, had Stephen Foster sheet music in it, didn't they?
Absolutely, and that's kind of something that. You know, some people know that, but not everybody really knows that, you know, or you know, even his lighter hits, like "I Dream of Jeannie" with the bright, light brown hair, which I'm not sure who's doing that one, but one of the people in the concert will probably handle that material.
Yeah.
So we did that, and there's another one, "Don't Bet Your Money on the Shanghai," which is an up-tempo one that's talking about don't bet your money on the Shanghai rooster. There's one that's "A Woman Loves a Man with a Mustache," which is a novelty number. I'm talking about how the ladies love a man with a mustache and you shouldn't be clean-shaven. So, especially around in Cincinnati, that's kind of I think that's a very topical number.
I have a full beard, if you recall, so I'm okay with that.
And there's been the whole, when they first mentioned that number to me, I was thinking about how they've been talking about all the guys with beards as lumber sexuals.
That's not me. I've had this since law school. I'm not a recent phenomenon there. No.
But it's funny to think of Stephen Foster in that sort of way, instead of just thinking it as precious history in the past.
Right.
He was kind of like trying to pull the material into the future by just making it relevant as
yeah.
a present.
Oh, sure.
So, and I feel like that's something that John Morris Russell has really made a point to say. We don't want to just do old-timey stuff, but we want to have the material be true to the heart of what it was, how it was written. So we'll do that, the Camptown Races.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So many great guys. He wrote so many songs that are just part of, you know, that American history songbook.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they just go on and on and on until you really get into it. You forget how many songs the guy wrote.
Oh, man, it's pretty amazing. I mean, but he was one of those guys that just pushed it to the limit as hard as he could, and then unfortunately he didn't get the praise that he probably would have liked in his own lifetime. But thankfully, over more than a century later, his material can still light up a room and has created an American legacy. I mean, that's pretty astounding.
Yeah.
Especially when you think of people who are singer-songwriters who write songs, you know, that are popular songs now, just thinking of, like, you know, that sort of weight, you know, being placed upon your own material,
yeah.
you know, that's just an amazing notion.
This will be a good, you know, as soon as I saw this, I made sure I could go, and I made sure that I got tickets for it. This is just going to be a blast. I talked to when I saw the poster, I called him, and they said, we've never done anything quite like this before. I said, good.
Oh.
Yeah. I said, well, you need to keep doing it because it's a couple-day event.
Because that's something, too, is, you know, like symphonies are like how kind of like how folk singers are, where they're trying to find new ways to bring in people because it's just a new generation of people that are running the symphonies. And it's same thing with folk music. It's very similar where it's, since it doesn't have to be the newest current thing, how do you make this long history of musical performance relevant to people who are used to just looking at their phone all the time?
That's,
you know,
right.
And that's
well,
a,
you're right.
You know, and it's like trying to find that halfway point. Like, it's really cool to be able to do that because, you know, of course, this is going to be my first time working with the symphony.
That was going to be my next question. Have you done that before? So this will be new.
No, I never have. I'm excited. It's doing that and, just being able to play some banjo with or harmonica or quills and throw that with the symphony. That's
quills? Cool. Quills with the symphony. That's, you know.
Well, the quills are the panpipes
yeah.
that I play.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, so we'll do something on that, you know. And so that's kind of fun on my end to be able to help elevate those particular instruments for the Cincinnati crowd, because it's like, you know, also that area is like very, I mean, they're you know, it's one of the places that's given me a lot of inspiration for a new crop of people that are really wanting to, I mean, just push the boundaries of where you can play. It's not so much you have to push the boundaries of the music you're playing as much as
right.
where you're playing
now. I understand. This is going to be, it's a multi-day event, isn't it? Are you doing more than one show here?
Yeah, there will be two shows, I believe. That's my understanding.
So like the 23rd and the 25th, maybe? It's a Friday and a Sunday deal?
I believe so.
Okay. And on the bill with you, Roseanne Cash is on the same bill, right?
Yeah, Aoife O'Donovan.
Aoife O'Donovan, yes. I mean, it's kind of a neat, all of these names make sense, but it's kind of like, yeah, I'll put them all together and see how it comes out, and then put a symphony behind it, see how that works, and let's do Stephen Foster music and see, these things to me are just very exciting. And as soon as I saw your name, I thought, I bet Dom is really excited about doing this, because I had a feeling it was kind of a new thing, and just knowing what I know about you, if you can take your flutes and get up in front of something new. I wasn't thinking that specific, but I knew you would relish the opportunity to get up and do the music that you do for a smaller crowd anywhere. I mean, just now you've got a giant symphony behind you.
Yeah, man, it's really a cool, it's really just a great great opportunity. I knew when they sent the offer down, it was just like, oh, okay, great. And, you know, like I said, I know Stephen Foster's work well, but I have not delved into the entire catalog. And the fact that they pulled out some songs that I'd never heard, it's really exciting. Just the notion to be able to do some of these new songs it just pulls out different parts of the repertoire. And so it's also helpful to me too. It keeps me from being complacent. Helps me jump out and do some new things too.
Which, you know, without that, you would eventually get tired and bored, I think. I think you wouldn't want to. I don't think you would want to show up and do the same show every night. Good night, folks. See you. You know, I think you're all about recreating that moment. And I think the live part of what you do is just something that really pulls you into.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's especially for this sort of stuff, it's such dramatic music. I mean, you know, that's one of the things that's really nice in live performance, being able to pull the drama out of the material. You know, like I mentioned with the old folks at home, it's just to be able to pull out this other aspect of the song that might not have been, you know, hasn't been thought about before. It's a really nice notion to be able to do that. And the fact that the symphony has been so awesome about, and, you know, working with me on the arrangements over several months. I've talked with Tim Behrens about the arrangement,
nice.
And you know, and we came to an agreement on what to do, which has been really a cool thing too. Because as a musician who's I play by ear on my instruments, and to be able to be with this orchestra here is a very much an honor as well, and for them to be able to write out an arrangement in which I can play to. That's a very exciting notion as well.
Have you gotten together and like rehearsed with them yet?
That's going to be next Wednesday.
Okay.
I'll be coming out to Cincinnati. We'll practice up to the shows, and like I have audio. They've sent me MIDI files and stuff of the arrangements as we've talked about them, and I've been listening to those. And then when we get there with the live orchestra, we'll hammer it out.
But have you stood in front of a full orchestra and felt that percussive? I just think it's a different. I mean, you're going to have so much fun. This feeling, when you know, you've probably been there before. I'm joking with you, but you know, to be in front of a full orchestra and the way they're going to do it, I just think that would be like the most spine tingling thing in the world once they kick it up. And you're all those instruments, and you're in the front of it. I just can't imagine. It's like being in front of a big band. I just think that would be the coolest feeling.
Oh, that's going to be great. I think the biggest group I've ever stood in front of was like the Prairie Home Companion house band.
Okay.
I think that's probably the biggest group, but I know that like a symphony is going to be, that's going to be, wow. This is just going to be something out of this world. I've always wanted to do something with a symphony. It's kind of like,
oh, great.
Just in like the back of my head, you know, just to be able to feel that.
I'm great you're getting to do it, and I'm going to be there and see it. That's exciting. I think it's going to be a blast. I really think it's going to be a blast. You're going to have a good time, and
I can't wait.
Before we went on the air, Dom, you were saying you were going to another performance, what, tomorrow?
Yeah, tomorrow I'll be driving up from North Carolina to Boston, and I'm actually doing the Martin Luther King Jr. celebration concert for the Boston Children's Choir.
Mm. Now, by the time this airs, you will be back from that, but I just wanted to let people know how active you are, that you're heading up to Boston, and you'll be coming back down here next week to do this show. What's the Martin Luther King? Tell me about that that particular thing.
Well, the Boston Children's Choir, they're going to do their big concert for, and they asked me to be the guest performer, so I'll be leading a couple of songs with the kids and playing banjo on a few of the other arrangements that the kids have put together of different songs. There's going to be, like, I picked two traditional ones for the kids to sing with me, Going Down the Road Feeling Bad and I Shall Not Be Moved, which I learned... you know, they're very well-known tunes, but I learned the particular arrangements from Joe Thompson, who's a black fiddler that that was the basis for the Carolina Chocolate Drops material when we first started. And especially after Might Be Moved, he has a particular way he does the melody that's different than most versions you'll hear. So I'm going to teach that for the kids. I'm also going to sing Only a Pawn in Their Game by Bob Dylan for the concert. And then they're also going to be singing Wading Deep Water, which Crooked Still did, as well as a Paul Simon song, American Tune. And it's going to be a really great concert, a lot of variety.
Can you see? Am I just like stretching this to absurdity? But aren't you taking the position? Aren't you going to? Not that you're going out to do it on purpose, but aren't you in fact sort of like when you talk about taking the banjo up and playing? What's the first thing Pete Seeger did when he got to a crowd of kids? He taught them to start singing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So are you? I don't know. I mean, it's a nice tradition to follow. I mean, you know, Pete could show up and get everybody who never thought they could sing before start singing again, and you know.
Well, I mean, like to me, I'm all about it. Like I'm not. I can't say that I'm quite as politically active as Pete is in terms of being out there for that. But in terms of spreading the music and trying to educate people through music. I think that's a very powerful tool that I definitely learned from Pete's work, and as well as his brother Mike's work. Mike was a very big influence on me as well. But I mean, that's the thing about folk singing. See, I've spent so much of my career downplaying the folk singing part of it, that the fact that there's some interest growing for folk singing. It's really a beautiful notion. So to me, I'm all about it. I'm all about trying to get kids to sing and getting them to understand some of that history, because it only enriches you as a person as you learn more of the history of our country and our culture. And that, you know, that's something that's why I picked Only a Pawn in Their Game. I think even with with this the horrible stuff that's happened in Ferguson and Staten Island and the crazy race relations stuff, that Only a Pawn in Their Game is still very relevant in the way that it talks about how the rich people push, you know, they get poor people to fight with each other, and that it's not just a black thing, but it's a black and a white thing too. Like, poor white people get it too, but the only difference is that they get pushed into saying, yeah, well, you know, dislike these people because they're part of the problem. Mm. And that's part of the war that's, I think, has been happening, you know, in those areas, is that, you know, people are taught to hate each other, and so then when everybody finds out that there's a lot of hate that's going around, you know, they say, well, why is this happening? Yeah. You know, and I feel that Only a Pawn in Their Game in classic Bob Dylan style really touches upon that issue without being too specific to a single event. And so that's something that, one, to teach the kids about it, and two, to hopefully get them to think about what's going on in the world around them. Yeah. I mean, folk music's always been good for that.
The more obvious thing, and I don't know that it was ever spoken, he probably did talk at length about it, but the more obvious thing is, if we're all singing together, we aren't fighting.
That's right. That's absolutely correct. Yeah. And that's something that I think has been downplayed over the years, but I feel like that's something that's been coming back in full force. Like, it's just people needing to do stuff together.
Yeah.
You know, community, whatever type of community, right. You know. I do feel that's something that people are pushing toward. And so, in my own work, that's what I'm trying to do, is trying to at least get my little piece out there, and then hopefully, open the doors for some other people, or even have some doors open up for me with like-minded people as well. You know, you just never can tell.
Yeah. Dom, I'm just a huge fan of you as a person and you as a musician and what you bring to the performance that you do, and I'm just thrilled that you had the opportunity to drop by again. And I guess, well, I told them about Facebook. They can find you on the web. They can just go to Dom Flemons and kind of track what you're doing and keep hold of you that way, too.
Nice. Well, thank you so much, Steve. Yeah. It's always a pleasure talking with you.
Man, listen, I just enjoy everything you're about, and I nominate you. It's a heavy burden, but I nominate you to just pick up this let's teach us all to sing. Let's teach us all to sing, and then if we're singing and smiling, even if we're just singing and thinking, we aren't fighting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, man.
All right. Hey, Dom Flemons, thanks, buddy. I will see you, and I don't know that I'll get to you with the orchestra, but I'll be there. You'll know that I'm out there on that Friday that you're there, and I'll be thrilled to see you up there on stage.
Nice. I'll keep an eye out for you.
All right, buddy. Take care, Dom.